Good to see everybody here this evening. Hope you've had a good day today. I was looking at the news the other day. For those of you who don't know, Carolyn and I have got an opportunity to go to Seattle for a few days. Her sister and brother-in-law have invited us to go with them. We're going to be flying out tomorrow. And I had noticed in the news that they had a headline, and it was a rare incident of an engine coming apart while the flight was going. And it was Southwest Airlines. And we're going on Southwest tomorrow. So I've only flown once in my life. I really enjoyed it. It was on a little commuter plane and had a round trip between Wyoming and Utah. And I'm looking forward to this one as well. But we're hoping to get a good engine. Maybe they'll have a different one than the one I saw. So anyway, I've got lots of confidence in them. I want to talk about freedom tonight, the freedom that we have in Christ. I think that maybe it's one we don't think about a lot. We a lot of times get to thinking about all the rules and the regulations and the requirements that God has on us. And sometimes we don't see those rules, those commands for what they are. And what they are is are a structure that allows us to have a confidence in our Christianity, but they give freedom. They're not something that are to bind us or to restrict us from things that are good for us, but they're to give us freedom. In James chapter 2 verse 12 it says, "Speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom." We know the old law had a lot of restrictions. And was a lot more specific. There were certain types of food you could eat. There were certain types of food you couldn't eat. There was all sorts of sacrifices that had to be made. There were the daily sacrifices. There were the feast sacrifices. There were the sacrifices you had to make for sin, and different types of sin had different types of sacrifice. There were times of the year where they had to offer morning and evening sacrifices. And so they were all very specific. And everything about the building where they worshipped at was extremely detailed, and it had to be carried out to the letter. And now, under Christianity, while the old law has been nailed to the cross, and we are not under its restrictions and rules and regulations any longer, we are under a law. But James refers to it as the law that gives freedom. And so I want to talk about that freedom tonight. In the building industry that I was involved with through real estate appraising for a number of years, and actually worked at a construction site, mainly just cleaning up when I was a kid, it has something called the UBC, the Uniform Building Code. And the UBC tells the builders the bare minimum standards that they need to operate by in order to build that house. But they don't tell them what kind of a house to build. And while they may have some standards on the materials that they use, they really don't tell them what kind of materials to use. In other words, if you want to build a house, you can build a two-bedroom bungalow. You can that's maybe 640 square feet. You can build a two-story mansion with fancy columns. You can build a four-level home. You can build whatever you want in these areas as long as it's done to code. And the code does not prevent you from building the type of house that you would like to build. It just protects you from building in the wrong way. And in many ways, when you look at Christianity, that's what God has for us. He has some very specific commands. We talked last week about the bare minimum standards that God has given us, not from a point of view of trying to see how little we can do for God, but He does have standards. He tells us how we're saved initially. He tells us how to live our daily lives as far as the things that we can do and things that we must not do. He tells us about the worship and what He expects of that. And so these things give us a structure to our religion and a structure to our service to God. And while they can be confining from the aspect that there are certain things we cannot do. You can't get drunk, you can't lie, you cannot be immoral. But they give freedom, and that's why he calls it the law that gives freedom. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 10, It talks about the spiritual houses that each one of us build. Starting in verse 10 of 1 Corinthians chapter 3. By the grace God has given me, I laid a foundation as an expert builder, and someone else is building on it. But each one should be careful how he builds, for no one can lay any foundation other than the one already laid, which is Jesus Christ. When you look at the Uniform Building Code, that is one area that really does not vary. You have to build the foundation to these minimum standards. You can make it better if you want, but there's minimum standards, and the foundations on just about every house that you see in any particular region are almost going to be identical. If they're on a crawl space or if they're on a basement or on a slab, obviously there's differences, but those things will be the same. And so he talks about that. Our foundation is Jesus Christ. We cannot build a spiritual house without that. Those who think, well, you can be a good Muslim and be saved, you can be a good Buddhist and be saved, you can be a good atheist and be saved, just fill it in. If you're not using Christ as the foundation, you cannot be saved once you come to whatever the age of accountability is for you. Verse 12. If any man builds on this foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, his work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and the fire will test the quality of each man's work. A lot of people don't like to hear about the idea that we have work to do. And a lot of people really don't like to hear about the fact that God expects quality. But the quality that with which we build is really something that is to enhance our lives. Does it enhance our service to God? And the answer is yes. The better servant that you can be, the more things that you can figure out in your life with the freedom that God gives you that you can use to serve Him, the better your life is going to be. And the more effective you're going to be for God. And that's the difference between using the gold and the silver and the costly stones and somebody who wants to say, okay, here's the bare minimum, I'll do that, but not a thing more. The idea of, I'll be a servant of God, but don't you ask for anything extra, because that's not what I'm trying to do. And so there's going to be a day. There's going to be a day of judgment that's going to test the quality of our work. Verse 13, it says it'll be revealed with fire. The fire will test the quality of each man's work. If what he has built survives, he will receive his reward. If it's burned up, he'll suffer loss. He himself will be saved, but only as one escaping through the flames. Now, there's some things in there that I have to just tell you, I don't understand. How can you be saved and not receive a reward? I don't know. I can just tell you that there is something within this passage that seems to indicate that that God is not only interested in our obedience to Him, but He's very interested in our heart and the quality of our life and service that we live before Him. It means what it means, and God will reveal some of those things that are difficult for us to understand now, but it is important for us to be thinking about the fact that we're not just building a spiritual house. We're trying to build a quality spiritual house, a quality service for God. In Matthew chapter 7 and verse 24, Jesus says this. He tells why we need to build our houses right, by the way. He says, therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who builds his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. Well, Jesus is the rock, and that's why we have to build our houses on Jesus. In verse 26, he points out what happens when we don't put his words into practice. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. I can't remember the exact hurricane that it was. I think it was Hurricane Andrew, and it hit parts of Florida. And there was one area that when you looked at it from the aerial views they showed, it just looked like every house was destroyed or damaged so badly that you couldn't live in it, except for one. in this one neighborhood, there was this house that was standing. Now, certainly it had some of the effects of the storm. The debris from the other houses went through the window, for example, and things like that. But the house was still standing. And they went to those people and they said, "Why is your house standing? How are you so fortunate?" And they said, "We built this house, not just to code, but we built this house to withstand a hurricane." And it did. And I've thought about that a lot through the years. If you and I try and build our spiritual houses on the cheap, if we try to go before God and say, "What is the least I can do for you and nothing more?" then I think that from what he says, we can be saved, but just by the skin of our teeth. But it doesn't look like there's much reward. And maybe that reward he's talking about is not only from an eternal perspective, but maybe that has something to do with our physical lives and the quality of our physical lives. You build your house, your spiritual house, with quality. Your relationship with God is not what's the least I can do for you, but what's the most I can do for you. And it's going to change your life. And your house is going to withstand the storm. And while there are a lot of people, as a matter of fact, I think human nature is, we want to sign up for a relationship with God that doesn't have any storms. We want a life that doesn't have any difficulties. That's not what life is about. Life's a test. And God does indeed allow tests to happen to us. Some in some people's lives more severe than others. There's no question about that. But the tests will come, the storms will come, and the quality of your structure is going to determine whether or not it'll stand. Because if you build it on the foundation, the right foundation, then it will. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 12. "Therefore, my dear friends, as you've always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good purpose." This is one of my favorite passages because it really does show us that there's a lot of leeway in our lives. Again, there is no leeway as far as obeying God's standards. You don't have a choice of whether to have faith or not and still be okay. You don't have a choice whether to repent of your sins or not and still be okay. But you do have a choice as to how you're going to serve him. In my lifetime, in just the 56 years I have lived, I have made I have worked at everything from collecting pop bottles to washing dishes and being a busboy to cooking chicken for the colonel to being a real estate appraiser to being a full-time preacher. And I've enjoyed all that. But you don't have to go that route. You can do what you want to as far as, and think about that. We know that, don't we? But whatever job we pick is going to take up the greatest percentage of our time. And so why not find something that you truly enjoy if you can? Why not find something that is in harmony with your aptitude and with the things that you really like to do, as long as it doesn't conflict with God? I don't think you can be a bartender, for example, but I do think if you want to be, you can be a waiter or a waitress. But there's a lot of things that God gives us leeway in. He allows us to figure out how we're going to raise our kids as far as, will we send them to public school or will we have homeschool? Will we send them to college and pay for it? Will we let them go to college and they have to figure it out themselves? There's a lot of things in your family that you will do differently than the way Carolyn and I have done it in our family. But the idea is, as we go through life and all these physical things that we do, we're working out our salvation. If I'm going to be a worker, I'm going to be a Christian worker. If I'm going to be a father, I'm going to be a Christian father. If I am going to go out and enjoy some kind of recreational activity, I'm going to do it as a Christian. I get to pick a lot of things in my life, but I still have to work out my salvation. And it has to be done with fear and trembling, and it has to be in accordance with God's will and his good purpose. But if I keep to those standards, then there's a lot of freedom, isn't there? Isn't it nice that we don't all have to do the same thing? 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 27. One of the things that I love about God is He gives us a freedom to figure out the best way to act in certain situations. There are disputable matters. That's one of the things that has always, I'm not sure the exact phrase, I don't want to say amused me, but one of the things that I have watched for years is the way that different people handle disputable matters. And there are some people who do not consider any matter disputable unless they've determined it's disputable. and everything else, people have to do the same way that they do. We do have to go by the scriptures. We do have to go by the code. But there are things that are going to, we're going to handle differently from our perspective. And I think God gives us some leeway in that, because there is a freedom to figure out things when it comes to the disputable matters. Verse 27 of 1 Corinthians 10. If some unbeliever invites you to a meal and you want to go, eat whatever's put before you without raising questions of conscience. But if anyone says to you, this has been offered in sacrifice, don't eat it, both for the sake of the man who told you and for conscience sake. Not the other man's conscience, I mean, not yours. For why should my freedom be judged by another man's conscience? If I take part in the meal with thankfulness, why am I denounced because of something that I thank God for? Well, we obviously don't live in an idolatrous society where the idolatry consists of sacrificing to different false gods, to Zeus or Diana or whoever it is. But back then, they did that. There'd be people who would be offering a sacrifice to this false deity, and after the sacrifice was made, the meat that was left over would be sold in the marketplace. Some of the people would eat that in honor of whatever false deity that they were serving. And so there was that problem in the New Testament. And so how do you handle that? Do you just stop eating meat? And Paul said, look, just eat it with good conscience. You don't have to figure out where everything came from. But he does say now, on the other hand, if somebody is being attentive, if somebody brings it up, if it's going to cause someone else to stumble, then you be careful, because you cannot use your freedom, your knowledge that all meets the same, and if somebody foolishly offered it to a God that doesn't exist, that shouldn't mean that you have to go hungry or buy a more expensive piece of meat. You can do that, but if somebody else is worried about it, then you take them into consideration. Romans chapter 14 is something very similar. Accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. One man's faith allows him to eat everything, but another man whose faith is weak eats only vegetables. There were people who were so concerned about that they wouldn't take any meat at all because they didn't know where it'd been. And they weren't a butcher, so they couldn't know when they went to the meat market. In verse 3, the man who eats everything must not look down on him who does not. And the man who does not eat everything must not condemn the man who does, for God has accepted him. And this part I love, and I think this is something we need to take to heart in every area of our life. Who are you to judge someone else's servant? You really need to understand this verse. This verse is not saying that we cannot observe that somebody is living a sinful life and identify that as sin and encourage them to come out of that sin. As a matter of fact, I believe we have a responsibility to do that. But I do believe what this is talking about is the idea that we are looking at somebody's life in a way that we don't have a right to, with a critical eye, with a nitpicky perspective, that we're looking for something that they're doing wrong. Maybe you don't take caffeine and you think that nobody should be taking caffeine, and you look over at Galen and you see him drinking a Dr. Pepper and you say, oh, that Galen, he's just the worst person in the world. And Galen might be, but not because he drinks Dr. Pepper. That's good stuff. But the point is this. You don't get to take a disputable matter. If you think you shouldn't drink caffeine, if you think there's bad effects, don't do it. But keep your nose out of other people's business. On the other hand, if somebody is partaking in something that is illegal for them to partake in, a 20-year-old partaking in alcohol, for example, which is illegal, or somebody that is doing something that may be legal for them to do, but is going to cause a weaker brother to stumble, that's when we have a right to step in and say, you need to think about what you're doing. We don't have to control their life, and we don't have to take away their rightful freedoms. But we're not talking about the idea of when it says, who are you to judge someone else's servant? We're not talking about the idea that we can observe what's wrong. We're talking about me looking at somebody and saying, okay, you're going to hell because this is what you're doing. That's not my place. I can identify if something is sin or not, and I can encourage people, and people can encourage me, but there's a difference between that and judging. To his own master he stands or fall, and look at this, he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. One man considers one day more sacred than another. Another man considers every day alike. Each should be fully convinced in his own mind. Do you see the freedom there? I remember a family that was so opposed to Christmas that they just were, it worried them no end that anybody would celebrate Christmas as the Lord's birth. And now I can see not bringing in a celebration into the worship. I don't think we have a right to be doing things like that where we're not told to. But the idea that I could look at somebody else's life and say, I know you're holding this day as special. I don't see where you should be doing that, so you need to stop it because it bugs me. That's one of the greatest problems in life, is getting after people because they bug you or because they're doing things that don't suit you. Or because they're not studying in the same way that you study. Or because they're not praying in the same way that you pray. Or they're not taking part in a job in the same way that you would. The idea behind all this is this, I believe. God has standards for us. They're commandments. And we're not to violate those commandments. They're there for our safety. Just like a building code that tells you that you don't need to put your plumbing wrapped around your electric wrapped around your plumbing and things like that. They're for your safety. God wants us to walk in agreement with His Word and in obedience to His Word. But He also wants us to be able to serve Him as best we can. We have different personalities. We have different joys. We have different passions. We have different aptitudes, different talents, and different abilities. And God allows us to use those in His service. If you and I can figure out how to use our talents and our abilities to the best of His service and encourage others when they are trying to do the same, but not insisting on them being a carbon copy of us, we're going to enjoy the freedom that Christ and God meant for us. And if we can't do that, then I'm afraid that we're going to have a really hard life because nothing will ever suit us. One last passage is the one we began with, but I want to read it again. James chapter 2, verse 12. Speak and act as those who are going to be judged by the law that gives freedom. And then he says, why? Because judgment without mercy will be shown to anyone who's not been merciful. Mercy triumphs over judgment. One of the greatest things that we can do with our freedom and the freedom that others rightfully have is to make sure that we have a merciful attitude towards them. Because that type of an attitude is going to be brought into the judgment. And it's really critical that we have used our freedoms well and have done so without infringing on both God's commands and other people's freedoms. Invitations open this evening. You may have a need to respond tonight, and if you do, for any reason, we'd encourage you to come while we stand and sing.